I wasn't here on the 30th, and I didn't interact with my colleagues before that number, for some reason. Best known to myself. I think probably because I didn't think about the last month, when instead of coming to you, I went to Pittsburgh and showed the work that I did at the Park Gallery in Pittsburgh.
Angela, do you want the light on, please?
No, we don't need a lot of light. And also, last week, I was asked to lecture on anything, which is my subject of research, as a drawing, to the geriatric registrars. Just thought I'd need to have a puff on my head because I might just run out of a puff during the talk. So the performance is starting here. I apologise for this, but I think I was going last. Writing. It's, I suppose, the closest one you'll get, I think this is John Cage's ideas of art and reducing the distinction between art and light.
Sorry, between art and
life.
I was sandwiched between my two colleagues. It was an all-day course, and this was the lecture. And I'm going to give you a sort of shortened version. And I'm going to invite you to tell you the things that I said and did. As a sort of mirrored image, I suppose, as not studio. That is not studio, this is somehow within the studio. Yes, I was sandwiched between MRSA and C. diff, so there was a strong notion of the haptic MRSA, and where one places one's hands, and the act of cleansing. And I should perhaps tell you that my very first piece of drawing performance was when I was doing my MA at Wimbledon in drawing, and I squirted all my colleagues at the hospital with disinfectant and told them it was an act of cleansing and that it would remove guilt and purify them, and that that's what it was. And I launched continuing professional development, got a round of applause. It was actually extraordinarily derailing. We were high tension, high emotion. We as consultants were objecting to management, financial management. Anyway, and it was then written up by Rosie Millard in her book, The Tastemakers, UK Artists Now. So, my subject of research is empathy.
Do you want to go to the next slide?
I do.
Well, it's not on to show yet, is it?
The thing at the right, bottom left, is it?
Bottom left.
Yeah, right. That thing there. Yeah. That's it.
I just thought. Now, remember that none of my audience has a degree in art, and I had to explain some of what I was doing, and that would explain where the format of this talk, which I am re-giving you to you in order to actually explore that paradigmatic relationship which I have with myself, which is like having four minds, two conscious, two unconscious, on the other side. So it's like playing a game of mixed doubles with myself, where I am the ball. And in a sense, that's my act of drawing, is this ball bouncing around from one direction. This is my inquiry. My title is Drawing Towards the Infectious Nature of Empathy. I'm a microbiologist. It does explain my understanding of how space is and the importance of touch. And that I would draw in a three-dimensional sense out into space. And my question is whether it's a useful visual thinking tool in a medical community, and whether it can actually be useful to my colleagues to allow ideas, or to draw ideas out of them, particularly within their use of empathy. And I just show some examples of early work, and of an installation type. I will always also use invitations to my audience at a private view and invite them to draw, and I go around with my little tray and I say, can I tempt you to a little drawing? Pencils aren't on there, but it is my intention that people will draw for me. And obviously when doing that, I am inviting them to use both taste and smell. Those are being conjured up. The exhibition was called Cage, and it was just before I started my PhD. And I used I used these little sculptures to illustrate my ideas, and latterly I have invited people to make little sculptures along with me, as well as drawing, as my methodology of drawing collaboratively with my participants. And some of them I would say is collaboration, because I've known them for 20 years. Some of them are just participants, I haven't met them before. As my ability to use the two media has increased, I've been able to invite people to both draw and make sculptures of me. These are my notes, but latterly I have asked other people to draw with me. This is my mother's dental kit from when she was a student. These are just some illustrations from Southwark Park Gallery. There's Carolyn's work. And this is my installation. And I suppose I was also drawing on memory, because the photograph was done when I was a BA student at Central St Martin's. And there was something important about drawing those memories together in order to make this work, and to make the sculptures both in a bronze finish and in a wax type of ceramic. It's a ceramic substance, but it has a waxy look to it. Drawing on my interest in Madame de Rosso, who was a contemporary of Rodin's in Paris, and he was particularly interested in the first glance, at the moment before one really saw in any conscious sense, the moment when one's unconscious was feeding the drawing. And it was important really to pull these things together. I had started drawing in the park in Dulwich in preparation for the exhibition in Southwark Park Gallery. And the drawings are of, well, and these are things I've drawn for some time using memory rather than live drawing, patients on the intensive care unit at the hospital I work in. and really as some sort of counterbalance to that, there are other drawings of erotica beneath that, which I placed high up because this was a gallery for children, and obviously given my position as a doctor, I have to be particularly careful about ethical considerations. And my research has actually gone through the ethics committee at the hospital I work in. I will talk about another project I did called Catching Empathy, which was what I did for the big draw at the in October. And I did that to hospital, and I'll show you pictures of that later. But whilst using those sort of fishing metaphors, I became interested in the shapes of the fishes, and using an artist called Brian O'Casey, who's a Cornish artist of Irish descent. I started drawing animals, and there is something important about locating my work within nature, with a capital N, that allows me greater freedom and allows me a more positive approach to my own work. And this piece is called God Knows, and so it could be read in a biblical sense. And bottom right is my dog having a crap. And as part of my notion of drawing, I would include squirting my colleagues with disinfectant and all those bodily fluids being excreted from the body. So I have quite an abject notion of drawing, which I wouldn't talk about to my colleagues, and I didn't mention that other than to point it out to them, but it's just something about defining where you are. And I did, when I passed my little phrase, can I tempt you to a little drawing? That word. I did say, these are all my failures. These are all, we talked a lot about bad things today, so I did decide that I would put these out. But these are what I consider to be my bad sculptures, and I thought about, well, what was so bad about them? There's something about, to me, they don't feel as if they embody empathy, and I'll talk to you about how I see empathy, but there's something about these that doesn't have it, and there's something about that they don't exist as line drawings. You can see that partly because of my training, and partly because the way I understand the way drawing exists. It, for me, the act of the line is quite important. Please don't. Do.
Thank you.
If anyone wants to draw, they're very welcome to. And I have brought along the drawings that we did at the at last week. And if anyone wants to have in, I'm sorry, I don't know what time to this slide. It's been a bit too low. But these are the people that I read about. I'll just particularly mention Wilhelm Boringer. If people want pencils, there's a big box on down there in my bag. He wrote Abstraction and Empathy in 1908, and he reviewed. His basic thesis was that the empathy was organic work, and the highest exponents of it were the Greeks, who did the wonderful organic drapery and sculpture, and that abstraction was something that was done in moments of terror at other times. For example, the pyramids would be an example of an abstracted form. Where he falls down is he couldn't conceive of those wonderful drawings by cave people. He couldn't conceive of them as exemplifying empathy because they were primitives and therefore they couldn't be empathic. And so his thesis sort of falls down there. Kogut, I'll talk about in a moment. Carl Rogers, I think this is the best definition of empathy, entering the private perceptual world of the other and becoming thoroughly at home there. And I will talk about Milstein's easy listening, and I think that, or prolonged empathic immersion, which I think actually has some parallels with what Carolyn was talking about earlier in terms of the fold, and in the sense it's if you are folding yourself into someone else's space. We'll talk about that more. Titchener coined the word empathy. I've talked enough about worrying, I think, here. But he talked about the Greeks and their confident surrender to the outer world and the sensuousness. And because I was talking again to people who did know, Venus de Milo is a good example. This is Venus de Milo in her original setting, and I hadn't realised that actually Venus de Milo was presented on a completely abstract base when she was created. I have to say, I do struggle with Freud, and he talks about an inner imitation being involved in empathy, and empathy being midway between inference and intuition. And that, I prefer other ways of talking about it. And in fact, I feel very comfortable with Winnicott and his, you know, music hall approach to life, in a sense, and his understanding of the way of engaging children, and the fact that if you take children from wartime London and put them outside London, that you need to put them in a sort of family context where there is someone who can relate very closely to them. I hadn't realised until recently that Kohut was actually sort of thrown out of Europe because of his self-psychology and so on, and that his understanding it was against the Freudians, and that he went to, I think, Chicago in order to develop his ideas. And I'll come back to Carl Rogers, who's rather Californian approach to psychology. He's very easy to read and easy to understand, and he's powerful. He has been invited to, as a result of his work, person-centered therapy. He's done a lot of work with international communities and so on. People worry quite a lot about the difference between empathy and sympathy, and they particularly quote Lauren Wiss. And I think Paul asked me about the difference between empathy and sympathy, and I answered that if someone stole your bike, I'd have sympathy for you, but that doesn't imply empathy. And I've been thinking about, for example, I have sympathy for people in China and Burma, but I don't have empathy with them because I don't have the understanding, and I don't feel at home in their minds in order to understand really what they're going through, and I've only been trapped in the lift once when I was 6 years old. I don't have the experience to do that. It's been a projective identification is something that is not empathy, and I don't. And what does Lauren Wisp say? In empathy, one substitutes oneself for the other person. In sympathy, one substitutes others for oneself. And I think that's some example I gave there. Whereas in empathy, one acts as if one were the other person. And it seems to me that drawing is a useful tool for drawing that out of oneself and of others. Mernstein talks about clear psychological boundaries, and one can allow those to be loosened, and talked about with particular patients where ego defences were reduced, that it was as if the boundaries weren't there and one could not quite easily tell who was the owner of each thought. And I thought about when does that happen? For example, if the light is fading and one's having a conversation with someone and it carries on during that time, sometimes there is a sense of the conversation rolling onwards and not being quite clear where the boundaries are, or in long car journeys. I thought my audience might need a little rest at this stage. I talk particularly about the importance of playfulness and a powerful attachment between the participants. And I talked to the work of Daniel Stern in his Understanding of Attunement. I'll come to that later. I took on some fruit to my team meeting for my PhD. It's an important part of playfulness, being part of activity. This is more Mermelstein, about the mutual surrender between the listening and the partners, so that there is this very easy communication and prolonged empathic immersion. Because I don't understand it, and I told them I wasn't going to talk about it, and I won't, someone here who understands this much more than I do, so I'm not going to talk about it here either, other than to say that there is powerful neuroscientific evidence now that, for example, you can demonstrate increased blood flow in certain areas of the brain, particularly in the limbic system, when people are empathizing, you know, and the tests that are done are, for example, put a couple who are a couple in a room together, and if you shock one of them, the other one will have blood flows in their brain that show that they are experiencing empathy rather than experiencing pain. And that's the understanding of what's going on. And the provocative piece of work here about the way men and women empathize. And because of this and discussions I've had the week before, I did raise this question, and there was a very vigorous debate about the difference between male and female consultants expressing their empathy. This is work from Sam Baron Cohen about measuring empathy, because I have been asked to. I can't escape from looking at the medical side of it. There are various types of empathy which you can measure: cognitive empathy versus or emotional empathy. And when you look at one can add in social skills and improve that, and that's where men would do better than women. And this is work that some work at Union Gallery by Christine Borland, who worked with medical students dealing with empathy and how they're trained to express their empathy. It's not a way that I was trained, these things weren't dealt with at that time. And one can listen to these medical students struggling with patients using the little stethoscopes at these stations. The exhibition is called With Practice, and this line is misplaced, empathy is not being pleased at Hopkins and still watching the mother as it one's own personal distress in response to another's mental state. Chrissy Moran's work with she asked another artist who was also a patient, and she monitored her whilst being told the results of her cancer. And there's the histopathologist doing this, and the limbs that people practice stitching up on. I came from a different vintage where we practice on the patients. And I'll just go back to that work. For me, this work does not explore empathy in the way that I understand it. It's quite mechanistic, and it seems to concentrate on the clinical. And I think there's far, far better ways to draw out empathy using something that is much more akin to drawing, that is much more about the prolonged empathic immersion that goes on within hospitals between people who work there for very long periods of time, and that one has much greater chance of drawing it out than using such what feel to me like mechanistic and clinical ways. But in my MA thesis, I made myself a definition, and I used some words of Daniel Stern's, and I apologise, I cannot find the original words in the book. But I will find them at some stage, but at the moment I can't find them. But I bastardised them and said, it's about casting out the net, capturing the experience that may be presented to any one of the five senses. And I think that's why I use my little tea tray, and I want to conjure up all the five senses, usually more than one, and recasting that communion with one's own sixth sense as a mark engaged in the act of motion, and the importance of synchronicity is in being there to capture the moment. And I think that sort of synchronicity is important in medicine, because you've somehow got to be triggered to be there at the right moment. And I was just going to show you some pictures of the catching empathy that I did. If that's okay, Mr. Tom? You had enough for
one more presentation?
There is.
Will I go through them very quick?
Mm-hmm.
I'll show us two or three.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the slides open, view on the menu. If you scroll down on the menu, that's a view, and then that's selected. Because then you have all images, and you just click the ones you want.
Well, I don't want this presentation at all, I want the other one.
Oh, you
are.
They are in this presentation. Mm.
Being a surgeon working down the scope is like a drawing in big surgery, which is like sculpture.
My first question would be, if I can pick it up, You know, you stress very much with your microbiologist. So if you wouldn't tell me, I would rather think you're maybe or you know, because you were from the wards and from your interest in psychology, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, seeing you as a microbiologist.
No, I don't like
anywhere in your work, you know, besides the tray, maybe if you would have worn some plastic gloves, you know, with some disinfectant. No, Tiffany's there, she's a biologist. Where do you bring yourself in as a microbiologist? In the empathy discussion?
Well, if you think about the way microorganisms spread and the way they cascade, if empathy were to cascade through the hospital like a great big epidemic, wouldn't it be wonderful? So I use microorganisms, mechanisms of spreading, to spread my psychological ideas.
So this is the bioreactor where it can all happen. The art college or gallery, or do you go beyond that?
Do I go? I don't.
To understand your work, would you see it only in the area of an art world, understanding what you're doing, you as the artist, or would you bring the work back to your biological studies? You know, is it a true collaboration between yourself as an artist and a biologist, or is it you investigating the arts separately? Or will the results from what you're doing in the art world come back to you as a biologist?
Well, they come back to me as a consultant within the hospital, within a group of people who are struggling to deliver a quality service empathically. You're asking me, and I think that the term infectious is misleading in the title, and is meant to be misleading. Yes, I use microbial metaphors in my thinking, but also I think of, as if you think of infectious as in he had infectious laughter, I'm looking at it in just that sense. I know it's difficult and people ask me all sorts of things about it. Sometimes people, my daughter's boyfriend said to me, well, which do you prefer? You're not answering that, are you?
No, I'm asking you how the investigation in another field comes back to you as a professional in the field you're almost looking into as an outsider. Because you're both.
Yeah.
This is quite unusual. You know?
Yeah.
So the starting point is actually unusual, then you end up with your experience in another field.
I have to say that is not an area, but taking it back into microbiology and exploring that has not yet been done, which I think is what you're asking about. You can put two micro, it's to be done. Taking work from here and the way that people have interacted and taking it back and saying, well, are the parallels between the way that happens and the way you put two microorganisms into a test tube together and one can send out a pilus to the other, join with it and pass a piece of a plasmid of DNA which would encode for microbial resistance towards it. I know that there's plenty of mechanisms by which microbes promote resistance, develop ways of spreading that can be, that I am consciously and unconsciously using within the work. So for example, the way that slime produced by microorganisms will develop around, for example, a prosthetic joint within people who have prosthetic hips, and that slime develops around the microorganisms to protect them from the effect of antibiotics. It's a sort of, there are parallels with the way that people psychologically defend themselves, and those can all be brought out, but I haven't gone there yet because that's going to be really quite difficult, and in a sense sometimes I have to suppress that in order to take this out, and Avis knows there's been quite a lot of stuff I've had to suppress in order to get this far. For example, you know, it's been quite distressing, for example, to be on call with people being sick and doing work about drawing and empathy. So in a sense, the journey I've come so far has been difficult enough without doing that next step, but it's to be done. Thank you for asking me to.
There was one question I have. I don't really understand, but I have an idea, I have a sense about empathy and all the difference between empathy and sympathy. And there's something about empathy, as far as I understood, that, now I'm contradicting myself, I'm in a muddle about it, but it seems that an empathy, you take it upon, I would take it upon myself to have the same experience. And in a way, it's almost empathy is almost a process of taking away an experience from somebody, trying to they offload whatever pain or distress or discomfort, because it's not, you don't empathize with somebody if they're having a good time, do you? No, I mean empathy is about.
No, I don't. I think one can empathize. I think that you share a state of mind, and I think what you may be talking about is projective identification.
Possibly I am. Is that related to the process of empathy? No, but I honestly didn't think that you did need. I thought empathy was about a form of sympathy because somebody is in a situation or is going through a process which is something that is regrettable. Am I right? You wouldn't empathise with someone who was having a great time. Why would you empathise? I thought the word empathy meant.
Yeah, you know, in German it means you feel with pain.
Right, okay.
So they word empathy.
Mm. Right.
So it has this negative interest in connotation. Mm. I mean, I think it's usually used in that way, but people have said, well, you can look at Daniel Stern's work, and his work is done as a psychologist. Looking at the attunement, which he refers to attunement between the mother and their child, and how they share mental states, and that's not, he doesn't actually call it empathy.
What does he call it?
He calls it attunement and a sense of communion.
Right.
And I mean, in other words, I started to know, well, where's love come in? You know, when does empathy, what's the boundary between empathy and love, and someone else, you know, where's compassion? But if you look up in the dictionary, they use sympathy and compassion synonymously.
Right.
And also, I think Simon Baron Cohen's definition of empathy has something that Lauren Wisp would call sympathy. And I think it's my feeling that actually the words are not used as clearly.
I've got a slightly irrelevant question, but I think you're the third student I've come across who've done a PhD with a medical background, you know, or that's involved that. And the connection between drawing and medicine is normally people are attracted to the very objective kind of medical drawings that have nothing whatever to do with empathy or sympathy.
Mm.
And you know, my sort of hospital experiences always strike me that the people who really help are actually, you know, the ones who actually do. Because a nurse friend uses the word algorithm, which is in their training about you have to be very objective and not have any empathy with the patient at all to save them in many cases. And do you feel any conflict between the kind of approach to drawing you have, which is emotional and some or empathetic, and the whole sphere of medical illustration and fantastic drawings you have of, I've got a fantastic book on malaria, you know, it's got amazing diagrams, which are horrific if you know what they're about, but as drawings are helpful and beautiful. I mean, there's this great conflict in medical illustration, isn't there, that you've got the most, you know, as art students, we always used to collect books of skin diseases, you know, from the medical illustrations, which they're incredibly beautiful but horrific.
Yeah.
And there's that whole world of illustration, and which has nothing whatever to do with your subject. You must be aware of it, though. If you say you're doing drawing, people must occasionally expect you to be in that field in some way.
Yeah, I think I had a big argument with my husband about this, and he's an economist. He produced what I consider to be a lovely drawing for me. He tore a piece of newspaper out which had text on it about, I don't know, something was quite emotional about achieving. He turned it upside down. He drew this like graph thing, and he said, look, what you're trying to say, Angie, is if you move someone, if you've got someone whose empathy level is low and you want to get it up, that's what you're doing, we'll do that. But if you've got someone who's got a high empathy level, you're going to shoot them up here and that's uncomfortable. And yet my research would demonstrate that beautifully, that you've got to be very careful up here, and in fact you don't want to be pushing people up here. So, and I suppose that's the dilemma. What am I going to do with my results, and how am I going to do something useful with them, how are they going to be a good op practice, and how they're going to be useful and not destructive.
Yeah. There's two things that you've been talking about this afternoon. One is, how do you define empathy? How do you make a model of it that will be helpful to other medics to be able to communicate that model, so that you are speaking in a common language, and what constitutes it? Things like, how does projective identification function within this media? And then you've got your drawings, a useful tool, which is a means by which you can generate activities to engage in this process. So you've got the two things going on. When you're working in hospital, what is the best means of communication? Is it the activity of the drawing, or is it the engagement in the, let's say, the scientifics, the explanation, the defining of the model?
I've only just, this lecture is the first time, that's not true, it's not the first time. It's the first time I've done it with an audience I didn't know. I only knew one member of the audience, so it was a real testing ground. I've done that explanation stuff with people I know, but actually I use a lot of art language in a way to sort of confuse things.
Mm-hmm.
I think both will be necessary in order to really complete the shift, and actually I think that my experience of the discussion that happened afterwards, which was, and I didn't really go into it, but guys talked about how somehow or other there was something about the release that they got from the act of drawing, and my failures. And I said to them very clearly, no one ever died from a bad drawing, and it's taken me, you know, 5 years at art school before I realised that. That the people were able to talk about, people they knew, obviously other members of the audience knew, and they were quite specific about unimportant events. And actually, although women are supposed to be better at empathy, there was a great discussion about this. And Mary Claire said this wonderful thing about, no, it's all right. As she said, you know, if there's a fire, a woman will, these are ridiculous things to pull out, but there was something about it that came out in discussion, that women will run around and do all sorts of things, but a man would pick you up and take you out the door. And there was obviously something in the stories and the drawing or whatever that enabled discussion to happen, which I don't think drawing is not politically correct. And we are so politically correct in the ultimate order. I think it was something about the two coming together that is very powerful.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll stay on this side because my voice is a bit quiet, so I'll turn it off.